Now, if you will pray with me, O Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, beloved Jesus Christ,
Blessed Master,
Saints and Sages of all religions, I bow to all of you. I feel the wonder of thy presence. In the peace of thy glory. You are all pervading. All loving. And all wise. I am one with you. You have become me. All sense of duality. Has passed away. You are the ever living. Glorious presence. Now and forevermore. Reading from Master's Commentary on the Christian Scriptures. This is Master's Commentary on Mark 2:27 and 28. And he said unto them, The Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore the Son of Man is Lord also of the Sabbath. Master's Commentary. The spiritual code of conduct for observance of the Sabbath, especially as a day of divine communion, was created for the advantage and spiritual upliftment of man. The Sabbath was not created as some special entity that man is bound to observe blindly, without rhyme or reason. Indeed, an unenlightening following of dogmatically delineated Sabbath may at times contrarily be disadvantageous. Thus Jesus declared that the Son of Man, his physical incarnation with its discriminative wisdom, was the determinative Lord as to the application of the Sabbath injunctions. The Sabbath well serves busy worldly people, giving them one day out of each 7 days for freedom from busyness, that their outwardly active material nature may be replenished from within by soul calmness and bliss. Sunday, Son's Day, or Wisdom's Day, should be spent in God-awakening activities in the keeping with the true purpose of the Sabbath. To perform distracting material work on the Sabbath day instead of engaging in spiritual contemplation and communion with God may be in non-conformance with the Sabbath. But equally so, if the businessman compliantly remains outwardly inactive, yet is inwardly engrossed with business thoughts. A spiritual man who meditates every day and fasts regularly, and who strives to remain conscious of God during every activity, and yet may be occasionally lax on the so-called one-day Sabbath, may apparently transgress the law, but in spirit he has not. The Sabbath is serving he, not he the Sabbath. A rule consists of a system of mandated actions initiated to produce certain physical or mental results. For the most part, they are conditioned by time and the social and evolutionary state of man. Hence, they are variable in accordance with man's environmental changes. Physical, hygienic, social, mental, and spiritual disciplines were temporarily or permanently engendered to suit the development of man and civilization. With due regard to the implacable essence of truth in God's universal laws of righteousness, that rules are formulated to uphold, dictums have to be modified and diversely applied according to the changing needs of man with changing times and cultures. Jesus points out that if ordinary men can, without transgression, modify rules of conduct on the Sabbath, certainly the Son of Man, his spirit within his body, was also master of the Sabbath and could adapt its observance to accommodate the physical and spiritual needs of himself and his disciples with no diminution of spirit of the law. Jesus upheld the Sabbath as essential for man to recharge his vitality by the restful silence of interiorization. The worldly person saturates himself with worries and bombardments of sensory stimuli throughout the week, and loads his body with excessive ill-chosen foods and their unassimilated poisons. A day of fasting and introspective silence, tapping the peaceful wisdom reservoir of the soul, gives each individual a chance to think things over and reorganize his life into a balanced mode. Sermons and periods of silence and meditation on the Sabbath recharge body, mind, and soul. This peace, if deeply infused into the consciousness, may last throughout the whole week, helping man to battle his restless moods, temptations, and financial worries. If the worldly person gives 6 days of the week to money-making pursuits, eating, and amusements, should he not give at least 1 day to the thought of God, without whom his very life, brain function, physical activity, feeling, and enjoyment of entertainments are impossible? Observance of the Sabbath as a day given to God and spiritual culture signifies the willing cessation of all activities that scatter and divert the mind into material channels. To close theaters and other venues of entertainment on the Sabbath would only be a token formality, meaningless unless religionists willingly stay away from materialistic diversions to spend the day with God, spiritually rejuvenating activities. With so many material enticements kept alive on Sabbath days, the minds of people run riot. Where is the time for restorative calmness, introspection, and creative thinking to adopt the best actions for an all-round existence during the coming week? A Sabbath well spent in silence, meditation, and creative thinking, not frantic reasonings, but stilling of thoughts, which are then replaced with intuitive perception, affords the soul reinforcement with harmony, peace, and mental, physical strength to keep discrimination, to develop physically, mentally, and spiritually in the best possible way. The inveterate worker who goes at it nonstop 7 days a week lets his soul become subject to mechanical activity. Such a person loses his ability to govern his activity by free will, discrimination, and peace. He becomes a physical and mental wreck, shorn of spiritual happiness. Activity and calmness both must be cultivated and kept in balance, one with the other, in order to produce peace and happiness during the periods of activity as well as silence. The reader may say that to observe the real spirit of the Sabbath by spending it in seclusion, fasting, introspection, and meditation is impossible in modern times. I would reply, you might just as well say that it is impossible to be peaceful in modern times. Peace and God realization come with a price, giving the time necessary to their cultivation. Mahatma Gandhi, one of the great modern spiritual and political reformers, a man of intense activity, nevertheless spent 1 day a week in complete silence. From this he drew power to lead the whole nation of India to freedom. One reason why the modern generation is so restless is because children are not nurtured in spiritual ideals and practices. Instead, to get them out of the house, they are sent off to the movies or other restless activities following a short, uninteresting Sunday school class in the morning. Spirituality needs to be encouraged, not forced on as a discipline from an early age. The example should be set in every home. Spiritual endeavor in the beginning seems difficult unless approached with enthusiastic anticipation that generates a perpetual motion of divine ardor. The time comes when one Sabbath becomes the most interesting and desirable experience by a complete ecstatic communion with God. There is no happiness that excels the joy contact of God in deep meditation. In my classes and lessons, I have urged Self-Realization Fellowship students and disciples to celebrate the true spirit of the Sabbath on whatever day of the week possible, commensurate with their responsibilities. Even if they cannot devote the whole day to silence and divine communion, I suggest that they give at least 6 hours solely to spiritual contemplation and deep meditation. God does not keep a calendar and make himself available on only a specific day of the week. There are no time slots in eternity. So neither does he keep a clock to determine when the Sabbath begins or ends. The Sabbath is any day or hours of the day, interior communion with God. No matter what one is doing exteriorly, so that other days or hours of the day, though filled with life's responsibilities, may be inwardly converted into Sabbath by the feeling the presence of God during all activity. This is the spirit of the Sabbath law about which Jesus spoke. In contrast to the rigid, literal interpretation, simply involving cessation of work. In any case, physical inactivity does not stop the functional work of the body or control its involuntary movements, or still the racing of inner thoughts, all of which involve activity that ties man's consciousness to the world. The science of yoga defines the true meaning of actionless state that lifts the soul to God communion. The teaching of the Bhagavad Gita about action and non-action, the workless state of union with spirit, in which the vibrationless realm beyond active creation parallels the true understanding of inner versus outer observance of the Sabbath. Actionlessness is not attained simply by avoiding actions. By forsaking work, no one reaches perfection. Verily, no one can stray for even a moment without working. All are indeed compelled to perform actions willy-nilly, prodded by the qualities or the gunas born of nature or prakriti. The individual who forcibly controls the organs of action, but whose mind rotates around thoughts of sense objects, is said to be a hypocrite, deluding himself. But that man succeeds supremely, O Arjuna, who, disciplining the senses by the mind, unattached, keeps his organs of activity steadfast on the path of God-uniting actions, or yoga meditation. So long as man's mind and life force are tied to the senses, he is at work. It is when he learns to switch off the life force currents in the nerves that connect the mind to the senses that he attains the true, inactive state of transcendental spirit. If inactivity is the measure of proper Sabbath observance, therefore only the yogi who has reached the Savakalpa Samadhi state, wherein all bodily activity is suspended in the ecstatic trance of God communion, can be truly said to honor that commitment. The Gita points out an even higher state, the ultimate stage of divine communion, Nirvikalpa Samadhi, in which the yogi retains his conscious oneness with spirit without necessarily suspending outer activity. Perfectly identified with God as the sole doer, he is said to be inactively active, his outer body instrument engaged in doing the Lord's will, his inner being free of all desire-born entanglement in the world. quote, he is a yogi discriminating amongst men who beholds the inactivity in action and action in inaction. He has attained the goal of all actions and is free. And, like unto the lotus leaf that remains unsullied by the water, the yogi who performs actions, forswearing attachment, and surrendering his actions to the infinite, remains unbound by entanglement in the senses. Special Sabbath days are necessary for people who are continuously engaged in material affairs and who do not take the time for God. Jesus was always filled with the Spirit. To him, every minute of the day was a Sabbath. Whether he moved in the marks of men or retired into transcendent stillness. Hence, on any day of the week, he could perform legitimate action, such as appeasing hunger or healing, without violating the spirit of the Sabbath. These wonderful words, Master is constantly guiding our mind toward the inner meaning of all of these words and concepts and symbols. We hear much today about what will it take for this world to come to peace. We see the conflicts, we see the wars, and we see it with great sorrow. We see the suffering of individuals who are going through these experiences. And yet we all experience a kind of an internal war that is constantly abiding with us as we strive to go beyond the things of this world, strive to go beyond the restlessness of the mind into the interior state of stillness. As with the macrocosm, so with the microcosm. The macrocosm is the earth and its play. The microcosm is what goes on within your own mind, within your own heart, and within your own soul. And you'll see many parallels between the two, and this is not by accident. This world is the result of the sum total of all the consciousness of those souls who inhabit it. And right now we see a great state of disorganization. In many parts of the world, we see governments that do not serve the people well. We see wars in which many people are harmed, and which people's economy and food sources and housing and other things of necessity are either not available or perhaps are destroyed. And when I see and hear of these things, my heart goes out to all of those people. It is a great tragedy. And when we see ourselves not as separate from others, but rather see ourselves within others, then we feel true and complete compassion for those who are going through such experiences. Now, to really embrace a worldwide compassion would be impossible from a human standpoint. Because as human beings, we are filled up with our own thoughts, our own perceptions, our own view of this life. And when we see other people, we don't so much see them, oftentimes, as it triggers our own reactions. And our own reactions are what we are feeling when we see the difficulty of another person. If we see somebody else who is having a difficult time, perhaps they are out of a job, perhaps they have dirty clothes, they don't have the things and the resources that most people have, and it triggers in us a negative reaction, we may want to push that individual away. Also, if we feel very badly for them, perhaps we have had that experience ourselves. And so we hug them close to ourselves. We see ourselves within them. But this is yet not true compassion because we are still dealing out of the human ego. and it is the human ego's attempt at compassion. True compassion can only come about when the ego is out of the way, and when the divine mind expands itself out and identifies within the individual soul to the great universality of God consciousness. It is then that we can reach out and really see the world from another individual's point of view. Now, as I say, even that would be overwhelming if that were all that we were to achieve, because to feel so many people's pain and difficulties and problems would be truly overwhelming for any individual soul. But when God lifts you up into the higher consciousness, your heart and compassion can spread out, and you see not just the individual, but you see God's presence within the individual. You see the light, you see the peace, you see the strength, everything that that individual has the capacity within their soul to experience. So you see them not only as they are, but as they can be, as they truly are, even in this moment, if they could but realize it. You see that that soul is in the process of becoming, and it is through the experiences that they are having that they will be eventually, one day, lifted up in consciousness. They will transcend where they are at today, and they will more closely reflect the beauty, the strength, the loveliness, the everythingness of the God consciousness that is within them. When you see an individual with eyes of compassion such as this, you no longer regulate them to their current state, or relegate them, I should say, to their current state. Because that's what the human mind does. It sees them only as they are today. But through divine consciousness, you not only embrace them fully as they are today, but you see their capacity, their innate capacity, their innate beauty, their innate light. And you help to awaken that light, that beauty, that strength within them. And in this way, you become a blessing that's much superior to compassion that is given on a human basis. It also allows you to universalize your compassion. It will not overwhelm you because you are in communion with the divine presence as you stretch out and you experience the world in this way. Not only that, but you will be guided in what to do about a certain situation when you do embrace it in this way. There are times when you are prompted to lend some material help and support to get in, to help them clean themselves, to change their circumstances, to do what they can do in order to elevate their life. And there are maybe also other times when you are not prompted to do so. And it is not out of indifference. It is not out of not caring for the individual or for a situation. It's just simply not yours. You're not being called upon by the inner divine guidance. But you still see that individual or you see that situation as imbued with the divine consciousness. And through that, you are an automatic blessing because you are lifted up in consciousness already. You are a spontaneous blessing to that situation and that person. It's a fascinating life that God has me lead because there are times when I become aware that there is somebody who is praying and I will feel my spirit go out to them. And there are times when God will take a burden off of another person and he'll place it onto my shoulders. Now, I don't do this. God does this within me. And I know for a fact that he does. It's been proven over and over and over again until there can be no doubt within me at all. Now, this may seem like a strange mystery, or perhaps something that's not true when you hear this. But nevertheless, I can tell you that it is true. I know that it is true. And it doesn't do anything for my ego in the sense that I think that I've done something. I don't feel that way about it. I feel that God has done something. And some grace has gone out through this form, and some help has been offered through this form. And I feel it my greatest privilege in this world to be able to help in this kind of a way. And it is the way that God has given me to help. There are others who are inspired to go out and to raise money and to change the outer conditions of people. But God has given me this work to do. And so I do it. And sometimes it comes at a cost to this body. It puts it through great pain and great difficulty. But I don't mind. Sometimes I'm curious when God doesn't let me know exactly what's going on. And then he always does, though, in the end. Because somebody will call, or my mind will be drawn to some individual, or someone will write, and they've been saying, I've been having this difficulty, and it's the very thing that I've been connecting with, the very thing that I've been having happen to this body. And there have been times when I have had paralysis in this body. There's times when I've had great pain, and I've oftentimes wondered whether I need to go to the doctor or not. But inside, God says, no, don't go. And so I don't go. And then suddenly, just as it comes, it will be lifted from me. And it is gone. Or someone will call, and as soon as they call, it is gone from me. And so in this way, I know. And I know that I'm not a hypochondriac. I know that about myself. So I know I'm not making it up either. And once it's lifted, I'm able to function normally in this world again. And through this body and have full strength. And there can be days and weeks and months when I don't have it. I remember when the Iraq War first started. And the bombing was going on in Baghdad. And I felt such tremendous pain within my body. I felt such tremendous agony within me that was going all through my body. And at one point, Carla came into the room and she said, what's going on here? It smells like burning flesh. And this was the state that I was in. And in those days, and it lasted for several weeks, and I couldn't even move out of the room that I was in. Or if I could, I could just barely move myself out of the room, and then I had to return. And I used a walking stick because there is such great weakness in this body. And I can tell you that there have been many, many times like this. Now, normally God doesn't have me talk about these things. It's his mystery, it's his work, it's his doing. And I tell you this only to glorify him. Only to tell you that God's compassion, God's love, God's light is constantly streaming out to us. There is no one who is barred to it other than the walls that they have built up around themselves and that they keep erected. You know, we can make excuses for why we don't make the spiritual effort. We can reason within ourselves. We can tell ourselves we don't have enough time, or I just don't seem to make progress, so I don't do anything about it. But you know what? Not one of it makes a whit of difference. Because it works like a law. And if you don't invest yourself, if you don't do what Master says to do here and go deeper within your spirit, you will not get the results. And one day you may feel very badly that you've wasted so much time and so much of your life without making any true, sincere spiritual effort. And there's a part of your mind that may think it just ought to be handed to you. You shouldn't have to do anything. For a long time, I resented that I had to work so hard, that I had to go through so much. Eventually, I had to let go of that resentment. And of course, what I realized was that I was the very one who had built up the very walls that I was trying to tear down. And since I had done the work, I had to do the work to get rid of it. But it wasn't just me, because I had the grace. I had the grace of my own guru, my guru lineage, of all many great saints and masters. I remember there was a day when there was he's a very public figure, disciple of Paramahansa Yogananda, of masters. And there was much disturbing news out of this, from this individual. He was not living the life as a true disciple, and certainly not as a Swami should live. And I felt sullied by it. I felt dirtied by it. I felt it in my aura. I felt it in my electrical body around me, and it just wouldn't leave me. And it went on for several days like this. And it just so happened that Larry came to know of much of the same thing at the same time and felt exactly the same way. And one day, we were looking through some slides that Marge Ranney had sent and given to us, and there are some wonderful pictures from India, and as we were going through them, up flashed this very rare picture of Meher Baba. And as soon as his picture came up on the screen from the slide projector, it was as if a spiritual grace, a light, emanated out from that picture, and it washed us both clean. In the moment, we didn't say anything to each other. But as after we got done with watching the slideshow, I told Larry what had happened, and he said exactly the same thing had happened to him at the same time. So you see the grace that is constantly coming out, and when one realized master is one with that light, you see, it's not just for them, and it's not just for a small circle of devotees, it's for everyone, because they are universal. They may have a particular work to do with some individuals, but that grace is not limited to just a certain group, just a certain small circle. It will go out to any who are receptive. So through some mysterious means, Meher Baba reached down through time, picture that was taken in the early 1960s, and here it flashed up on the screen, and by some mysterious means, this grace flashed out from that picture and washed us clean, baptized us. And it was gone, all of it, and washed clean in it. You see how wonderful spiritual masters are. Some people resist the idea around spiritual masters. They just want to go directly to God, and that's all right. But we should not deny that we all stand upon shoulders of giants. Without these spiritual masters dating back to Brahma and Krishna and Buddha, Jesus, Muhammad, and so many others, we would not be where we are, and civilization would not be where it is. There are many people who have no peace in themselves around religion. They feel that religion has lied to them, has deceived them, and has done them wrong and has done society wrong. Now, you can certainly look at evidence of things that the church has done wrong, and that has things that have been done in religion that have nothing to do with its originators. But you have to reason within yourself, how much worse would it have been without any religion at all? How much lower would we be on the evolutionary run? And I can tell you, a great, great deal lower. Just because some people abuse and misuse a movement doesn't mean that the spiritual truths and principles that are being spoken about are a lie or are wrong. It just means those individuals are not sincere and they are not applying what they have learned. Nobody who is following the teachings of Jesus would go out and create some of the evil that's been done in his name. Now, I was thinking one day about what it would take for Jesus, with great foreknowledge of the future, knowing that there would be evil done in his name, knowing that some of the worst and most atrocious acts done in this world would be done invoking his teachings and his power. And yet, he surrendered himself to God's will And he came and he was an avatar. He was a Messiah for all the ages, knowing that there would be that misuse down through time. It was inevitable. And yet the great good that has come from his teachings, from his example, from who he was within God, is tremendous. And there are so many millions and millions today on earth who receive such great benefit from his teachings, such great upliftment, and so much so that all the masters of the East have recognized him, all the great masters of the East have recognized him as one of the true ones, one of the truly great ones. We are fortunate indeed because we have these teachings in our life and in our society. And we only need to look a little ways to see what it's like without them, to see that we are truly beneficiaries of this great spiritual giant, this avatar. So we should give thankfulness and blessings for everything that we have received in this way. Now, it doesn't mean we need to go along with the wrong program when we know it's wrong. Even as Jesus didn't go wrong along with the wrong program of the Sabbath when he knew that it was wrong. He knew what the Sadducees were saying was wrong. They were applying it in the wrong way. So you stand up for truth. You stand up for what is true and real as God has given you to understand it. And you are unafraid. You don't have to go out and beat down other people's doors, but you are unafraid to stand in that truth. And when you do, and you establish yourself within that peace, within that silence, then you will help to change this world. Your inner peace will bring about peace on this world. I know people who are so upset about the different wars that are going on right now, but to tell you the truth, they are not people of peace. They are so angry, they are so upset, they are so full of vitriol and willing to tell anybody or any place, anyone about it. It's not peace that they're teaching. It's not peace that they're an example of. They're filled with rage. They're filled with anger. There's no way that somebody who is so dominated by an emotion like that can be a peacemaker. They're a rabble-rouser. And they find cause. But they are not men of peace. To be one of peace, you first must have peace. Peace Pilgrim taught this. She was a great soul that I met. She's a modern-day wandering sadhu. And she went without money, without just the clothes that she was wearing, without any food. She walked until given rest. She would fast until given something to eat. And she had 25,000 miles for peace written on the back of her sweatshirt. And people would stop her and ask her about it. And she would tell them about what God had shown her. Now, she didn't invoke God's name much, but she had that constantly in her mind and as her inspiration. But what she wanted to awaken within people was peace, an inner peace. And enough people started having inner peace, we would have outer peace. And this is true. And it doesn't take all the population, but it takes a significant number to really be dedicated and manifesting peace. And it begins to multiply them. So if you really want peace on this world, first become established in peace. Then you may be a true harbinger of peace to this world. You will not get it through rage. You will not get it through vitriol. You will not get it through an acid tongue. You will only get it when you have it. And this world is in sore need of peace. Now, we don't even have a Sabbath for much of the population anymore. And we hear the chronic anxiety. We hear the chronic fears that people have. And that they're mounting and mounting. Do you think there's any relationship? That there's no difference practically between a Sunday and any other day of the week? Is there any time, any day of the week Are those who are so much filled with the world really taking a day off? Really taking a day to be introspective? It doesn't have to be Sunday. But some day out of the week when you really get quiet, you really get established in the peace that surpasses all understanding. Make yourself a day of peace. Now, you may not be able, because of family and obligations, to give yourself an entire day, but try to get at least half a day. Half a day. Walk through the woods. Go out by the water. Walk around your neighborhood, but don't be chatty. Go out and be at peace. Go out and make it a walking meditation. Go out and sit in a peaceful place. Watch your breath. Affirm within the breath the great self, the great I am. I am. I am. Take it deeper. Take it further inside until you hear the echo repeating throughout your being, the great I am, the great self, the Atman, and finally the Para-Atman, the supreme self. And you will feel a peace that will just completely be throughout your entire being. And it will still this world. And you will be a blessing to this world.
I'd like to close by reading something from Papa. Peace is ever within you. The peace you crave for is ever within you. If you seek for it without, you will never have it anywhere. This is a great truth which very few realize. Surrender is the only way to peace. So in all circumstances of life, submit to the will of God and be free from the touches of worry and anxiety of every kind. All happens as determined by the Lord. Do not assert your will and expect everything to take place as you wish. Unpleasant situations are the common lot of mankind. Yours is to resign yourself to the Lord and remain unaffected by them. When the mind rests in peace by complete self-surrender, the heart's desire is realized without delay. The longing ceases by a perfect self-abandonment, and then no time is lost for its fruition. This is the secret of realization. So as usual, Papa, in a few succinct words, brings it all together. Now, surrender is not defeat. Surrender is perfect realization and comes about as you affirm that everything is perfect in God. Everything is floating in this equilibrium of peace throughout the universe. It is constantly active, but it is also constantly one with God. Trust in God. Realize God. Surrender to Him. And you will know this perfect peace, the peace that surpasses all understanding. O Heavenly Father,
O Heavenly Father,
Divine Mother,
Divine Mother,
I feel the wonder and the beauty,
I feel the wonder and the beauty
of Thy glorious presence,
of Thy glorious presence
in every part of my being,
in every part of my being.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
My heart is bursting with my love for Thee.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet.
I kneel in adoration at Thy feet
and surrender myself to Thee.
And surrender myself to Thee.
I feel the power of Thy perfection.
I feel the power of Thy perfection
surging in every cell of my body.
Surging in every cell of my body.
My mind and my intelligence.
My mind and my intelligence
are radiant with Thy healing light.
Are radiant with Thy healing light.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss.
My soul is filled with the ecstasy and bliss
of my communion with Thee.
Of my communion with Thee.
I and my Father are one.
I and my Father are one.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
Blessed Spirit, I am He.
To the light within me.